Hi there, and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years, and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them, and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds, and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado, to today's episode. My guest today won't mind me describing her as unique. Not because she's the first OBE we've had on the podcast, a fact that made me a little bit worried in terms of how I should address her, though I am reliably informed that I don't have to bow and watch my P's and Q's with her. Jacqueline O'Donovan is unique, being the CEO of UK-based O'Donovan Waste, the only female in such a role in London, and to my knowledge, is only one of three in the entire UK. The business was started by her father, Joe, and it grew to a phenomenal size before his untimely death at the age of 51. For her part, Jacqueline left school at 16 and intended to become a childminder before she was thrust into the role of MD of O'Donovan Waste at the age of 19. With no formal training, this was a big step up. O'Donovan Waste now offers a wide range of services including skip hire, roll on and off bins, waste transfer stations, tipper and grabber lorry services, recycled aggregates, road sweepers, wheelie bins and demolition services. It's renowned for its effort to clean up the industry and bring it into the 21st century. The company now has 150 staff with 85 vehicles and 6 different depots, and she's won just about every recognition and award in the industry. Although in recent years, the business was sold to Sortero, a Swedish firm seeking to become one of Europe's largest recyclers of construction waste, she remains at the coalface running the company. Jacqueline also does a lot of work supporting the Irish community in London, and besides being an OBE, she was also given the Freedom of the City of London, the Presidential Distinguished Services Award for the Irish Abroad from President Higgins, and a host of other accolades. Jacqueline, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Aidan.
Right, before we get into the history, perhaps you can give us some idea of what the O'Donovan Waste business is right now.
It's the size you say it is. It's a larger extension of the O'Donovan family. My siblings are still there with me. There's 4 of us there. It predominantly does construction and demolition waste, and we serve London and the South East.
At the time of your dad's death, the business was very large and a very successful one, as I said. But initially, when you and your siblings decided to reduce the business at a stage, what was the thinking behind that? Was it just trying to manage it?
Yeah, so I was only 17 when Dad died, so I was left at home to look after Mum because obviously it was a massive shock. The older brother had just got married 3 weeks prior to Dad dying. So I think that just made it even worse that we just had a massive family celebration and the first wedding in the family. So I was left at home to look after her, being the youngest. And when I was brought into the office, I think the older two siblings had tried their best to navigate through what Dad had created, but it was a massive monster. And there was just no... there was just no driving the monster. There's no feeding the monster. So it was a case of, right, we need to downsize.
Just to get our arms around it.
The two boys, the two brothers went back into the lorries and out on the road. The sister went off to have my niece, and I ended up in the office with one other girl. And, the rest is history.
2 years later, then you took the reins as CEO, even though you were the youngest, you know. How daunting was that? And did you have a plan in your own mind as to what you were going to do?
No plan. I suppose I evolved as the MD because I was the person in the office, and I was the only person there to sign because the boys were out driving, sister was off on maternity leave, and it just naturally evolved. And I think, I don't know, I just had a natural flair for it. I didn't realise at the time that I had a natural flair for it. I think my siblings probably saw the flair before I did, and that's why they were quite happy to leave me steer the ship. Being the youngest of 4 is very unusual for the youngest to be the MD. And, you know, they've all got their senior roles within their own areas, and we tend to stay in our areas. And when there's a big decision to be made, we discuss it, and then they leave the final decision to me, and it's worked really well. Yeah, we work in harmony.
And when you you did take over the reins, did you have at that stage a plan for even the next 5 years of the business? Never mind the next 35 years.
At 19, the next 5 minutes is as bad as long as you think. No, I had no plan. I had no business training. It was basically as it came, as the balls came, I kept hitting them.
And how did you solve then that knowledge deficit that you had?
I suppose I got a natural curiosity that if I don't know something that someone said to me, I'll go away and I find out. Okay. Or I would ask. I really am an advocate that there's no such thing as a stupid question. And I just asked questions after questions, and I listened and I listened. And I suppose, I'm not going to lie, it probably took me 5 to 8 years before I understood all the terminology when it came to the annual accounts and how the, depreciation and how it worked and what it meant, and EBITDA and all those type of things. So I had to learn on my feet. I didn't have any formal business training, and it had to work. So I had to do it. So.
And did you have anybody back at that stage? Because obviously, I'm sure your dad had a cohort of friends that were obviously involved in the business or new business or things like that. Did you have anywhere you could kind of go and say, listen, what the hell is this all about?
No, I didn't know. And that came more apparent during COVID. I didn't realise back then, in the 80s and 90s, that it was a male-dominated industry, because male domination just wasn't a word that was used. It was just get on with it.
Yeah.
And then it was, well, no, there's no other women in the industry, so there's no other women to ring or call. And still to this day, people will ring my older brother, can you ask your sister...
out on a day.
Yeah, what's this about? And get back to me, and he'll come in and he'll say, oh, so-and-so's rang, wants to know about what's happening, and I will tell him, and he'll go back and ring them. So, yeah, it's still...
Does that annoy you?
No, it makes me laugh. None of it throughout all of the 37 years has it ever annoyed me. Mm. I've only laughed at it. You mean I can walk in, and still to this day, I can still walk into a room full of businessmen for a meeting and be the only female, and it will be like Moses and the parting of the seas. Yes. It's just really weird to watch it happen. But yeah, no, it gives me a chuckle. Yeah, I think they're more scared than I am.
Probably are. But I suppose when you go back at, when you look at the first few years of it, to what extent was that naivety or your youth a big advantage? Because you didn't have something to, to compare against everything. You just went, as you said, it was like drinking out of a fire hydrant.
It was, yeah. It was just, as the balls were coming, I was batting them and scoring the goals, thank God. I can honestly say after 37 years, no business decision I made as far back as when I was 19 to now, have I ever regretted. Mm-hmm. I have moments in my head that I remember quite distinctly. So when I took over, I remember we're going back to banking days where there was queues for cashiers, and it was all done by people, not by machines. And I remember the bank manager, calling me over with his index finger, and he pulled me into his office, and keeping in mind now I'm 19, and he said, none of you are going to have the business acumen of your dad. He was a phenomenal businessman, and he was. He said, so we're going to have to close the accounts. And it was like, oh, okay. So first challenge, right, find a bank. So I found another Irish bank.
Right.
And then my hair was the wrong colour, I was the wrong sex, I didn't play golf, I didn't have an Irish accent. And it took me probably 8 years to convince the bank manager, please stop looking at me and just look at my numbers. And then he announced he was retiring. And it was like, I can't do it again.
Rinse and repeat.
Yeah, no, I said to the new man, I said, here, I've done my old plates with that bank manager, I'm not doing them with you. And fair play to him, we got on like a house on fire.
And did you ever meet the other first bank manager again?
I did about 3 or 4 years ago, met him at a funeral, and I rocked up and I said, hello, Frank, how you doing? And he said, yeah, I'm retired now. He said, oh, I can't. He said, everywhere I go, I keep seeing you in the newspapers or you're winning awards. I said, yeah, I know, it's great.
How sick are you?
Yeah, lovely to see you. Don't want to be you.
As I said, you are unique, right? In terms of, as you said yourself, you know, the number of females in a very male dominated industry. But I suppose, how difficult was that on the one hand, and then does it have its advantages? Are you kind of underestimated because of it?
Oh, massively underestimated, yeah. I mean, I remember when, so the second challenge was signing a lease for the yard, and it was a 10-year lease. Now, for a 19-year-old, 10 years is like a lifetime. And I'm looking at this document, I'm thinking, I'm going to have to sign this, and it's 10 years of my
That's
life.
50% of my life done, yeah.
And we're still in the same building 37 years later, so that was a good move. But, yeah, I had a Dublin fella, actually, that was transport manager, and people would ring up and they would ask questions. So they'd be doing a foundation job where they'd have to dig up the ground, and they'd want to know what type of material. They'd explain the type of material and what the bulk rate was and how many lorries they'd need. And you can't help me, can you put me through to a man, please? So I'd put him through to the man, and he'd put the phone on hold, and he'd go, Jackie, that this fella has got clay, and he's got this much of an area, how many loads? And I gave him an approximate, and then he'd go back and he'd give him the approximate, and I used to laugh my head off, because I think if I didn't laugh, I wouldn't have got through it. I wouldn't be the person I am today if I didn't laugh at it.
Did you not put a bit of stupid tax on top of the number then as well?
No. I think people are shocked at my knowledge. I think they're shocked at the fact that I know the whole of my business from start to finish. You know, you can ask me something about sustainability, about accounts, about depreciation, about the price of a skip. Electricity, water harvesting, recycling, you name it, and I can answer it. And I suppose that's been my strength, that if I haven't known, I've gone and found out. But I'm not academic, which has been, that's probably been my biggest hurdle, is the fact that I'm not very academic. So I always use my editor when doing an email.
Oh, very good. Switch back, working as a family, right, with three siblings, where does the business end, life end, and the personal life begin? You know, we've had a few different groupings, be it husband and wife pairing. We've had another family business on as well. And I'm always intrigued to know, you know, is business talked at Sunday dinner around the table on a Sunday dinner?
No, it's not. No. Life is, business is my life. The business is my passion. So it is my life. So it's, no matter where I am, it comes into some sort of conversation, whether it be with the family or somebody else. But we just have a natural connection. I can honestly say, touching wood, that it continues, that we, in the 37 years that I've been MD, that we've never had a massive argument. Now, if there's a big decision to make, we'll discuss it. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, they'll leave me make the decision. But they're quite happy. They've all got their senior roles. They all work in their own domain. And unless something goes wrong in their domain, I don't enter into their domain. We socialise together. Mm-hmm. And we live within 5 minutes of each other. So we see each other at the weekends. We have numerous parties. Yeah, we're very unique, very, very unique. I know an awful lot of family businesses that once they're out the door of the office, they don't want to see their siblings until they're back in the next day. But no, we socialise together. We're a very close-knit family. And I think it's from the fact that Dad died so young that we felt that the world was against us. So we all put our shoulder to the wheel.
And do you think that's been a huge positive to the business, the fact that you are so close in terms of its success?
Oh, massively, yeah. One of us could never have done it. Mm-hmm. It's taken the collection of the four of us to do and to get where we are today. Yeah,
do you each bring different skill sets into it?
Massively, yeah, right. Massively. We really do, yeah. We've all got different personalities. We've all got tipping points. So I'm the most patient out of the four of us. I don't suffer from stress. I think stress is a seed that a person sows in their own brain and builds it as big or as small as they want to do it. I see everything as a challenge. whereas my other siblings probably do suffer from a bit of stress because they sow that seed and then it grows. But yeah, I suppose I bring the calm to any storm, and that goes with the staff and the office as well as the family.
And the you know, when you look back over the years, did you ever get to a point where you kind of, I wouldn't say regret, but you kind of thought about what could have been if you weren't thrust into the role at 19 years of age?
No, never. No, I can sit here quite proudly and put my hand on my heart and say I've got no regrets in my personal life or my business life. I have a fantastic life out of the business, and I have a fantastic business life.
Very good. What percent of the success do you think is due to luck, and what's down to hard work?
Oh, I don't know about luck. I think it's all hard work. I don't think luck comes
into
it. Yeah. Roll your sleeves up, get stuck in. Yeah.
In the same way then, I suppose, given the fact that, and it is, you know, given the history, what extent has fear of failure been a driving force for you? Because you took over your dad's business, you see it all the time with second generations, kind of going, I can't make this cannot fail, or, you know, because dad did it and I want to make sure that it's a success.
Failure isn't in my dictionary.
Is it not?
No.
No. You'll find a way around no matter what.
No matter what, yeah.
It's interesting. Then, what was the Tell me through your decision to sell the business, because that must have been an emotional as well as a financial decision, if you think about it, because you are, although the name has stayed the same and things like that, and people will always recognise it as your dad's business and things like that, there's still an emotional tie to it.
There's an emotional tie to the staff.
Yeah.
But not to the business for me.
Okay.
Which is quite interesting, because I think the older two siblings find an emotional attachment to what they see out the window. Where I don't, which I've found quite amazing. I was there to do a job. I've done my job. The decision was made by my older brother. He was coming up to a big birthday number, and he said he wanted to take things a little bit easier. So I went out and I picked someone. I did a bit of a beauty parade and picked somebody to sell us. And then bang, COVID came. Then, unfortunately, my older brother and his wife were in a car accident, so that delayed matters. Then, bang, COVID came again, and we finally got through the due diligence. But that in itself, that whole experience of going up for sale was, I wouldn't say challenging. It was probably more irritating than challenging. You know, we ask really silly questions. And you just think, oh, God, like, my shoe size is 38 and a half, because that's about the only thing they haven't asked.
Yeah,
so the due diligence was quite hard. And I'm not going to lie, I had a real, there is an unconscious bias to a female in front of someone on a screen selling a waste company.
Yeah.
You just can't help it. It's just there. You know it's there. You know they're looking at that I'm a blonde and I'm a woman in a male-dominated industry. And to try and convince them that actually it's as good as it is because I've thought outside the box was quite a challenge. But, yeah, the initial decision came from the older brother wanting to take it a little bit more easier.
And in that regard, I suppose, two-parted in this one, what's the culture in O'Donovan Waste? Because you said, obviously, it was emotional in terms of taking care of the staff. So, you know, what is that culture that's in O'Donovan Waste?
We just see them as an extension of the family. So I'm still there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to lie, quite a lot of them have said to me, you are staying, aren't you? I don't know. I just bring this sense of calm and stability to the office, and they just feel secure when I'm around. And I think that comes from years of being able to come up to my door going, oh my God, I've got a problem, No, you've got a challenge. What's your challenge? And they'll tell me, and I said, well, you can do this or that. And they're, oh yeah, right, okay. And then they go off happy. I think the ability for people to ring me from, you know, the yard or from a from another the other offices or the other depots saying, "Oh, Jack, I have made a massive cock up here." And, well, hold on, let's see what it is. You know, no one's dead. We can work this out. And you know, that happened earlier this week. And I said, "Don't worry about it. Yeah, it's your first one in 7 years. Don't worry about it. We'll get over it, but we just have to deal with it this way." And then I have to tell them how to deal with it. And I think it's that sense of you're not getting chastised, so they're not frightened to make a mistake and come to me. I think if I had a culture of fear, the business wouldn't be as successful as it is now. But I've got an open door policy. If it's your birthday, I can see it comes up on Facebook. Oh, happy birthday, Tom. And he's like chuffed that I know it is his birthday. You know, out of 150 plus staff, I know it's Tom's birthday. So, yeah, it's a real family, you know, get stuck in here. If I have to do a photocopy, I have to go and do a photocopy. Yeah. I don't order someone to do it. I make my own tea.
Good. Here's so do I. And then what about, you know, when you're selling the business, how important was it that A, you were able to stay on, because there's an awful lot of buyers when they want old management gone. And how important was it that, you know, the buyers appreciated and recognised and were willing to keep that culture going?
It was really important that the buyers, that I liked the buyers, because we were just coming out of COVID. There was a earnout, a 12-month earnout, and their caveat was the fact that we'd just come out of COVID, so we needed to have
continuity there.
Yeah, and I totally accepted that. But then I turned around, so I didn't need to stay at all.
Okay,
but I turned around and I said, "Well, no disrespects, the only person that's going to get those numbers is me. So now you need to employ me for the year, so I can work on with the business and get it to where you need it to be." They asked me to do a couple of changes, a couple of tweaks and things, and I said, "Yeah, no problem." Some of them I didn't think would work, but you know, when you've got people coming from a different country, you have to let them see that actually I've tried it, but it doesn't work. I did tell you it wouldn't work, but hey ho. So they don't want me out. They have recognised that having the only female in London in this industry leading the way with safety, with sustainability. Our green credentials are absolutely unreal. You hear, I get invited to events like Women in the Glass Ceiling. Sky's the limit. Where's the glass ceiling just because you're a woman? You know, sky's the limit. And I've got a very gung-ho, sky's the limit. Yeah, what we can do it. I don't look at something and go, "Oh, we're never going to manage that." So
they're not problems, they're challenges.
They're challenges, and everything is surmountable. So yeah, so they're desperate to keep me.
And was there ever an option to merge with a UK business? So, you know, you could have argued that the mindsets might have been a little bit more closer aligned.
Well, funny enough, we actually had an Irish interest.
Okay.
And I've got to say that I was looking forward to the Irish interest because I was looking forward to going back and forth and back and forth. That didn't work out because, unfortunately, they did look at the colour of my hair.
Okay.
And they couldn't get past the fact that I was a woman.
Interesting.
So I had to kick them out of the
beauty parade.
Yeah, well, the process. And when I said to Grant Thornton, who'd done the deal for me, that they think we're horse trading, they went, "Sorry?" I went, "Doesn't matter. I know what I mean. They'll know what I mean." Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, that was a shame, real shame.
Do you self-analyse yourself and your decisions?
No. Sorry, did you want me to take a minute and think about
no.
that?
No, I want the quick answer.
No. I'm a Libra, and so I weigh things up.
And yeah. Then you just make the decision.
And I make the decision, and the decision's the decision. The bed is made, just lie in it.
Yeah, yeah. Come back to the area of staff, and I'd say the tenure of staff is probably quite high in O'Donovan Waste. There's a lot of people there for a lot of long time.
Yeah. I don't know how many I've got that are back for the third time. You know, they go and they come back, they go and they come back, and then they come back and they go, "Actually, do you know what? We're not going anywhere."
Yeah.
They think the grass is greener. But, you know, I suppose because the family has to come to the office and we make it fun because it's our life, that they think that that's going to be replicated in other businesses, and it's not, because they haven't got the personalities, they haven't got the continuity. So, an awful lot of people in double numbers. So, unfortunately, we buried our fitter that earlier this year, and he was there longer than I was. He was there when Dad was alive.
Wow.
Yeah.
So then where are you in terms of hiring talent or developing from within?
I do both.
Do, okay.
Yeah, I'm a mentor to quite a few people. I'm passionate about training. I think it's the way forward. We always train within. I will always promote from within, and I will always send people on training courses if they want to better their knowledge in the industry. So, I prefer to do it within if I can, but if I have to go out and get it, then I have to go out and get it. But I've got to be honest, it's a massive challenge getting staff in the UK at the moment. Everybody wants to work on the hybrid model, and it just doesn't work when your whole business is reliant on the phone ringing.
Yeah. It's funny because we had Gary McGann on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he said what used to annoy him more than anything else was not when he lost an employee to a better job. But what really killed him was when he lost an employee who went elsewhere or to a worse job. He said then, as a manager, he says, I always think I failed. He said, I should be creating the environment for people to be able to progress as far as they can where they are. They should never have to take a step back.
Well, if he needs coaching sessions, I'm free.
The two things I suppose I want to do here and talk as well is, obviously the industry is going through massive change.
And so
I want you to tell me O'Donovan Waste approach to change, but also then talk to me through the whole sustainability discussion and how it applies to the industry and how you're doing it and how you're trying to lead the industry in doing it.
Yeah. So I suppose I could see we were getting traction pre-COVID. We were getting traction. Price wasn't king. Compliance was becoming king. And also sustainability was becoming king. You know, the green credentials were massive to the tier one contractors. And then COVID hit and bang, we're back to prices king. So I could be sitting in a sales meeting with our sales director. I go out to clients as well with her if it's a large client or if they've requested me. And, you know, to have a buyer turn around and say to you, when you know you're the best at what you do, that you're the safest, that you've got the best sustainable operation in the whole of the UK, not even London. And they turn around and say, but yeah, you're too dear. We want it as cheap as chips. It's like, do you know what? I just want to get out of here. Because if you want it as cheap as chips, then you're talking to the wrong person. Because as far as I'm concerned, everybody deserves the right to go to work, earn a living and go home. Mm-hmm. And the safety stats for our industry are appalling, absolutely appalling. It's second to agriculture, and there's massive work to be done in this area. And we are really, really doing lots of work now, not only on the vehicles and the technology with the vehicles, but the style and the type of the vehicles. We do it with the driver and the driver training. So when I'd done all the vehicles and I looked at everything else that I could look at within the business, I then started looking at the driver. And London is a very busy city. Mm. You know, it is overpopulated. You know, we've got 20 mile an hour speed limits. We've got road humps, you name it. And when you're in a lorry, people are bibbing you and honking and shouting and roaring at you. So we brought in the Dynamo project, which we teach the drivers, we put a little gadget on their ear and we measure their heart rate. So we show them on the computer screen. So we say something like, your mortgage is going to double. And then they starts bouncing up and down. And then we tell them, right, now watch the bar and breathe with the bar. And we can show them that by breathing techniques, they can keep their energy levels full. So they're not worn out when they get to the end of the shift. When they get home, they've still got the ability to play with the kids, go out or do whatever they want to do, but it keeps them calm. when they adopt the breathing skill. So there is no road rage, there's less accidents. So my accident rate has just gone down and down and down. The fleet's got bigger and bigger and bigger, but the accident rate is down and down and down. And it's all through training and looking at what is the next risk, what is the next challenge for me to tackle. So that was the last one I did, was the drivers. And it's working fantastic. You know, year on year, my insurance goes down by thousands. And I don't understand. People look at what I do and think, oh, yeah, look, she's spending money on that. She's spending money on that training and she's spending money on this training. But the training, number one, the employee appreciates that I've invested in them. Mm-hmm. So they feel a great worth, sense of worth. And in investing in them, my bottom line's way better. Mm-hmm.
It's a win for both.
It's a win-win. But yeah. So many competitors look at me and think, oh, my God, how much must that be costing? But don't think of the bottom line.
Yeah. They only think of the initial payment and not
exactly,
the payback.
Exactly, yeah.
What's the hardest part of the job as a CEO?
Gosh, the hardest part? I don't think there is one, actually. I think the relentless interviewing people that apply for jobs that they're not qualified for. That's probably, yeah. You know, it's so time-consuming interviewing people. And, you know, they tell you on their CV that they've done this, that and the other. And when you get them in front of them and you ask them one question and it trips them straight up and you think, why did you not think that that was going to come out?
It would be the first question.
In an interview, yeah. So, yeah. You mean the first thing I always tell them is, look, honesty is the best policy. Mm. But yeah, and then if they take the job, if they actually get past the interview stage and they take the job, they go, oh my God, you didn't say it was going to be this busy. And I said, well, I did say it was going to be this busy. I did say it in the interview, but you weren't listening. Listen.
You weren't as clued into the interview as
yeah.
I was.
Yeah.
Who do you, or who have you sought advice from over the years?
No one.
Well, the family, that's it.
Yeah, you mean I haven't even sought advice from the family. I've advised the family that this is what the challenge is and this is what my intention is. And 9 out of 10 times, it's whatever you think, Jack.
Right. That's, okay. That's the standard answer.
Yeah, that's the standard answer. Whatever you think, Jack. We'll go with you, Jack.
Then given all of that, I presume you can't really obsess about the small things, can you?
Oh, I'm all over. I'm over everything like a rash.
Are you?
Yeah, oh yeah. I'm over everything like a rash. Yeah. I've just got a natural ability to be over everything by like a rash. I mean, I could be typing an email, have an ear pod in, having a telephone conversation, and listening to what someone's saying to a driver outside, and actually tell the person on the phone, "Hold on a minute. Why are you telling him that?" Yeah, no, I'm a fantastic multitasker, and I think if I hadn't been, I wouldn't have got where I was today.
Mm. The other thing, I suppose, when you look back at it, and you see with an awful lot of businesses, with success comes the risk of distraction, right? You start, you know, you get more money, you start to go branch out into other areas that you know you don't have that core advantage, and you lose focus or intensity or things. Was that ever a risk with the business?
No.
Or did you kind of know what your core set was? And
yeah, no, I think diversity in a business is dangerous if it goes too wide. And I think the only person that's ever managed that is Amazon.
Mm.
I think any other business that has gone too far or too wide on their diversity have failed. So, no, I knew what my core strengths were, my core services, and we stuck to them.
And what about geographically? You know, the London area, you know, was there ever a desire to move further north or further west?
There probably was, but I suppose then the years went on and then COVID hit and then it was like we'd made the decision that, you know, the older ones needed to put their feet up a little bit more and, yeah, it just didn't happen.
Mm. You obviously love the job, right? And so you're not under the cosh to stay there. It's at Her Majesty's pleasure, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, Queen Jacqueline.
Queen Jacqueline, OBE. Yeah. So, how long more do you think you'll do it? What would stop you doing it?
What would stop me doing it is if I reach a point where I'm talking to a brick wall,
right?
Because obviously the new company have got a hierarchy and their hierarchy's quite big. And I suppose the luxury of the last 37 years that is someone walks into me and says, we need a X, can I buy one? It's yes or no, whatever the case may be. And when we've had to buy new equipment and machinery, it's right, order it. Now that would have to go through a hierarchy. Mm-hmm. I'm not used to that. I know what the business needs. I know what we need to do. So yeah, if I start getting, I suppose, questioned about why would I even come up with that idea, that will probably be time. That will be the bell, the alarm bell in my head to say, do you know what? It's time to move on to pastures now.
Yeah, but I suppose that the longer you stay where you are, the greater the sense of security that the new owners will have, and that in you doing the job to a large extent. So it almost might never happen.
Well, yes and no. I'm very aware that obviously there's senior members of staff in the organisation that aren't family members, and they want to go up the ladder, and I'm going to stop them from going up that ladder, and I won't stop them. So I'm looking, I'm staring 2-3 days in the face soon. So I'll be part time. So that will give them. I think they need to learn to breathe and work and make decisions without me. I think I'm far too much of a certain crutch for them. You know, I'm a dead cert. Go and ask her, she'll give you an answer. Yeah. It's not, I'll come back to me. I'm a yes, no, end of. So I think, I'll know when I'm stifling the staff that want to go up the ladder. Yeah, yeah. And then I'll step back. I wouldn't stop them from doing that, because life's all about experiences.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the few things that have been presented to me, because people know that I'm coming to a part-time role, has just been fascinating and so exciting.
What advice would you give to a young person now? Not necessarily in the industry, but in the industry in general, at the start of their career?
At the start of their career, go with your gut. Never ignore your gut reaction. I think I probably did ignore my gut reaction and didn't take risks as much as I would have if I didn't doubt myself. I think people have just got a natural human way of sowing the seed of doubt in your head when you're so young and starting off. I would, my advice would be ignore it, go with your gut, go with your instinct.
In terms of all the awards and the accolades that you have, what are the most meaningful to you? And in general, are they important to you?
Oh, yeah, massively, yeah. You mean there's no one above me to say, oh, you've done that wrong, or you've done this right, or pat on the back. Yeah. You know, there's none of that. I've never had any of that. So I suppose the awards
Are
my pat on the back, the confirmation that what I'm doing is right, and I'm doing it for the right reasons. So, you know, not only have I won personal awards for, you know, Entrepreneur of the Year, PwC Businesswoman of the Year, Family Director of the Year. So they're all for me to confirm that actually what I've done is right and what I'm doing is right. However, the training awards, the health and safety awards, them type of awards, the recycling awards are confirmation that I'm dragging the industry from the 20th century to the 21st century. So they are my confirmation. They're my, yeah, you're doing it right.
And what about the other ones, the likes of the OBE and the presidential and the stuff that is business related but not due to business, if you know what I mean?
I've got to say that the presidential award was such an honour, because I know it's the highest award that Ireland gives. So that was lovely that I was given that for my work with the Irish in London. I was very proud of that. And the OBE that I was recently awarded in the King's Birthdays Honour List, I'm due to collect, I'm not sure when yet. That really sideswiped me. I mean, that is massive. It's massive because it's for industry for recycling and for safety. And that's why it's so massive for me, because I think our industry, people, okay, you know, recycling, reuse, reduce, energy from waste, all of that is all buzzwords at the moment. But, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it wasn't, you know, nobody wanted to talk to us because you move waste around like it's rubbish, you know. Nobody wants you in their backyard. Nobody wants you up the road. So, yeah, to have been recognised for it is fantastic, yeah. Yeah.
Good. Now, we have a closing tradition. The black book is coming out, and I don't know what it is.
You want my phone number, do you?
Now, this is an interesting one. This is an interesting one. I think I already know the answer to this one, but we'll go anyway. How important was financial reward as a motivator for success?
It wasn't.
In the least?
In the least, no. No, it wasn't.
If I was to ask you, what's the two top motivators?
I just get a buzz out of... I just get a buzz out of it working, winning. Money doesn't motivate me. Money is definitely not my motivator.
And you probably wouldn't have stuck at it if you did.
No, money's not my motivator, no. Money's not my God, no.
And a final question. Could you go back to the shop floor? Can you drive a truck and
yeah,
do all of that?
No, yeah, I can drive a machine, yeah. I can load a lorry, yeah. I can drive a lorry, yeah. Well, driving a lorry now is like driving a car. They're all automatics.
How are they?
Yeah, they've got more gadgets than a car now, yeah, yeah. But yeah, now I can drive them all, yeah.
That's good to hear. Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I would just like to thank my guest, Jacqueline O'Donovan. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks and see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.